The problem with most financial shows when it comes to calling the market is that it's one guy's opinion over and over again.
Sell, sell, sell!
But any veteran investor knows that there are two sides to every trade, a buyer for every seller, and vice versa.
Buy, buy, buy!
That's why Money Life brings you a wide range of experts.
I need people who, you know, can work well under pressure.
Each day you get the benefit of a new set of eyes on the market with different methods and decision-making tools. Every day you'll hear a different expert giving their take on the market, on what looks good, what looks bad, and how they feel about some of your stock selections.
This stock is blowing up right now.
You never know who might show up to talk stocks. It may be a famous money manager or someone you've never heard of before.
No!
But you'll always get their straight talk.
Must you always be so blasted honest?
Their straight talk, that is, about what they see happening on the market and where to think about putting your money on the daily Money Life Market Call.
That's right, it's Market Call time, and I'm very pleased to be joined by Brian Frank. He is the manager at the Frank Fund, the Frank Value Fund. If you are not familiar with the fund, FRNKX is the ticker symbol. You can go to frankfunds.com. Brian is the president of Frank Capital Partners. The fund has been around for more than 10 years, and it has outperformed the S&P 500 over that time, but it's had some of its toughest performance in its history of late. And that's not necessarily a surprise. Brian hasn't been on the show for a little while, but the last couple of times he's been on the show, he has talked about having some difficulty finding things to buy and how the discipline then tells him, stay in cash and wait for your opportunities. Again, if you want to find more out about how it works, frankfunds.com, on Twitter, at frankfunds. Brian Frank, welcome back to the show.
Happy to be here, Chuck. Thanks for having me.
Now, I talked about the fact that you have had tougher times finding things that meet your definition of value. Because I know you're willing to be fully invested if you find things to be fully invested in. So we always start by talking methodology, and we need to understand your definition of value before we go any further.
Right. Our definition of value doesn't change over time, and it's because it's an absolute definition of value. So our primary metric is taking the operating income and dividing it by the enterprise value, operating income being the middle of the income statement, EBIT, as it's called. And enterprise value is market cap minus cash plus debt. And we demand that that metric be over 8%, no matter what the Fed is doing, no matter what interest rates are. That's pretty much the minimum we want to pay for a business, because businesses are more volatile, stocks, and businesses also can't really benefit from the Fed buying back bonds directly, and there is a business cycle. So if there's a recession, you better have paid a low price for your business, because your operating income is going to go down. So over my entire career since the year 2000, we've been able to find 25 to 30 stocks, that's what we buy fully invested, that meet those metrics quantitatively. And then, of course, there's a bunch of qualitative stuff we put on top of that. We like growth companies, we like non-cyclical companies, we love strong balance sheets, all that stuff. And we don't make market calls. That's what makes this last 2 years so strange, where we're screening the market every day. We look at over 3,500 companies with our screens. And starting in the year 2014, it went down from about 200 to 300 companies a day that would fit that quantitative metric. And it's gone all the way to zero at the first quarter of 2016. So the difference between us and most other mutual funds, most other value investors, is we're absolute. We're not relative. So I could give you the cheapest 10% of the market, just like I could tell you the cheapest 10% of the Ferraris in the Ferrari dealership. It doesn't mean that they're actually cheap.
Right.
So using that absolute metric, when it's not net, we by prospectus, by strategy, are allowed to hold cash. So our stocks are going up, we're selling them, and the rest of the market keeps going up and we're not buying anything. So the cash, which has averaged less than 5% over the last 15 years, hit a peak of 65% in the first quarter of 2016.
Wow.
That's how expensive this stock market is, and it's stunning to me every day. Now, just very quickly, in the second quarter, it's actually changed, and we've actually bought three companies, and it's come down a little bit. It's still 55%, so it's still a tremendous amount of cash. But to me, that's the last leg of the bubble here that I see. I see a bubble in the indexes, and I see active managers, especially value guys, getting pummeled. other value stocks that I don't own are getting pummeled. So we actually bought a couple, three of them in the second quarter, even though the whole market hasn't rolled over. So that's, to me, that's, okay, we got to get close now.
And value actually outperformed growth early this year. It got to where guys who aren't as dedicated to their metric as you are were saying that they had been buying. They had gotten to where they were finding that it was tough to buy as well. So the question is, because it's company specific and it's typically not driven by market events, do you wind up in a circumstance where something like the Brexit and the theoretical fallout that we're going to see or could see or are seeing, does that actually pop this overvaluation bubble and help you buy some things? Does it put things in the buy zone for you, or is it going to take more than that?
It's going to take more than that. That's the scary thing that we see. You know, the action at the worst with the Brexit was down 5%. If I think the market, the S&P, can go down 40 to 50%, that's not doing it for me. Now, other value stocks, which we'll talk about in a bit, are down 50% year to date. That's going to do it. You know, that's going to come up on my screens, and we bought a couple of those that are actually down 50% year to date. So the whole market moving, I'm not the kind of person that thinks we need a catalyst to burst this bubble here. I think it'll just be a kind of a slow domino rolling effect throughout industries that we've seen already. It just hasn't shown up at the market level. I could point to a lot of stocks that are making new lows right now, just as many that are making new highs. So it doesn't have to be a whole market rollover. However, where valuations where they are in the aggregate, it would point to a bear market coming up at some point.
Well, let's talk. My audience by now is dying to know the name of something that made it through that process that actually has gotten to where it's a buy on your scale.
The one I'm most excited about is Liberty Tax. The ticker symbol is TAX, T-A-X. And they are the third largest tax preparation firm behind H&R Block and Jackson Hewitt. And the CEO used to work at Jackson Hewitt and founded, he founded Jackson Hewitt and he used to work at H&R Block. So we have probably the world's best tax entrepreneur running this company, and it is down 50% year to date. Now, if you know anything about death and taxes, they're the only certain things in life, as they say, and this company is not going to go through a recession or an earnings decline of any magnitude anytime soon. The reason it's down 50% is twofold. One, it's a franchise company. There's 4,000 locations, and there were a couple bad apples in there. A couple of guys running Liberty Tax locations helped facilitate tax fraud. So the IRS cracked down. It's a black eye for the company, but management came out and said it was less than 2% of locations, and it's not systemic. Knowing that there's tons of different owners of these things, that does make sense. That's something I buy. But also, management owns 40% of the company, so their money's where their mouth is, and they have a huge incentive to clean it up and clean it up quickly. The other reason it's declined 50% is the more interesting one, and that's the bubble that we're seeing. Not only are the indexes and the market at extreme valuations right now, but the flows are following that. So we track the amount of money coming into and going out of stocks. And pretty much since 2009, there's been more money going into the indexes, going into the passive investors, than active management. Now, starting late 2013, there's actually been money coming out of active management. So you have money coming out of active, going into passive. How does that hurt Liberty Tax? It's not part of a passive investment strategy. It's not a major part of any ETF. It's not a major part of any index. So it's not getting that flow. And when the bad event happened, the fraud news came out, there's just a vacuum. There's nobody to sell this stock to. So anybody that wanted to get out who was worried about that pretty much had to sell at a 50% discount to get anybody off the sidelines and interested in the stock. If I can take advantage of 20 more of those, I'll be jumping up and down. You know, that's a great opportunity because this thing is trading at a 6x EBITDA or a 16% EBIT yield, essentially, which is about 50% cheaper than the market. And it's also trading at a pretty big discount to H&R Block, their number one competitor, of course. And I would argue they have a lot more growth potential than H&R Block. They have a new concept called Siempre Tax, which is Spanish-speaking tax. And given areas like New York and Miami and L.A. and the biggest immigrant to the U.S. speak Spanish, they grew those from zero to 150 locations in the last 2 years. So there's plenty of growth left at Liberty, whereas H&R Block might not have as much growth. And Liberty's cheaper. It's cheaper than everything.
Quickly, we have time for one more.
Okay, the other one that we like is CPI Card Group, and the ticker is PMTS, like payments. And what they do is they manufacture credit cards. And that may not sound like an exciting business, but if you recall earlier this year, late last year, you were getting your new chip cards. And that EMV chip, that anti-fraud chip, is a big deal for the manufacturing card industry. And a private equity fund put this company together. They bought up some of the biggest manufacturers in the U.S. a few years ago in anticipation of the chip conversion, because the price per card is going up from 20 cents to about a dollar. So that's a 5 times revenue bump per card. And they saw that coming and they saw the opportunity. So they built this company, which is now the biggest manufacturer. It's got 35% market share. They IPO'd it last year at $10, and then something went seriously wrong. The conversion stalled out. Everybody was upset. The machines weren't working. It took 25 seconds to clear your transaction. The smaller retailers didn't want to buy the new point-of-sale systems. So the whole thing stalled. You're not getting EMV cards and gift cards and debit cards. Small issuers like community banks and credit unions. The big guys are done, but the small guys aren't. And the small guys are the biggest percentage of CPI Card Group's revenue. So this was a growth company, you know, IPO promising the world, and all of a sudden the revenue actually declined year over year in 2016. So the stock went from $10 down below $4. That's when we get interested. I mean,
right.
That obviously trails the market significantly.
So that explains it. I wish we had more time to talk about it, but
no
we
problem.
Have to get onto some stocks that my audience is particularly interested in.
Play, hold it.
You got to know when to hold up.
Or fold it.
Know when to fold up.
It's Hold It or Fold It time with Brian Frank, the manager of the Frank Value Fund. FRNKX, the ticker symbol, frankfunds.com. The website at frankfunds, the Twitter handle. Hold It or Fold It, you know how it works. So we're just going to jump right in and start with a request we got from Sriram in Cupertino, California, who wants to know about Science Applications International. That's SAIC.
I think you buy it. With economic weakness, cyclicals get hurt, and SAIC is a defense contractor, which is recession-proof.
And the valuation at this point is where it should be?
It's acceptable. It's not super cheap, but I'd say it's definitely at a discount to the market. So you don't get the cycle of the market with economic turmoil, and you get it at a cheaper price.
Either gets on board or he gets left behind.
That's a buy on Science Applications International Corp., SAIC. Our next request comes from Kirk in Huntsville, Alabama. It's Valiant Pharmaceuticals, VRX.
I don't think you buy it. I think that's a fold. It's a coin flip. I think it's either going to go bankrupt or it'll bump along for the next few years. They can't raise their prices anymore, and the balance sheet's a mess.
So in spite of everything that Bill Ackman has tried to do to make this company right, and in spite of the beating that it has taken, this has too much potential to be a value trap.
There's just too much debt there. They might even be able to turn it around, but they'll be paying those interest payments forever, and the interest payments might go up as they refinance the debt.
Put that one on the psycho list.
That's a sell on Valiant Pharmaceuticals, VRX. Joe in Colorado Springs and Dave in Vesto, New York, wanted to know about Cameco Corporation, CCJ.
Cameco looks interesting. Materials companies like the gold miners got crushed last year, and we bought them, and we made almost 200% so far year to date. Maybe the same thing could happen for uranium mining here with Cameco. It's very cheap.
When you say it looks interesting, that means you're willing to take a flyer on it at this point, or you're waiting?
I'm waiting because it's a Canadian company. The currency right now is killing them because the stock price is denominated in U.S. dollars, and they're still having earnings declines. It's still been a tough environment because Japan shut down their nuclear power plants years ago.
I'm just taking my time before making the move.
That's Hold It if you got it. You're looking for the right entry point on Cameco Corp., CCJ. Our last two requests both come from Dave in Beaver Dams, New York. The first, Alphabet, G-O-O-G.
I don't think you buy it. I think it's a sell. It's the greatest company on earth or one of them, but it's an advertising company, and they've benefited from the internet growth over the last 10, 20 years. But now that they have critical mass here, I think you could see an earnings decline in a recession, and the market is not priced for that at all.
That is a sell on Alphabet, Google, G-O-O-G.
Don't get greedy.
And now you understand how value investing works, because we don't get many sells on this show when it comes to Google. And last, again for Dave and Beaver Dams, Johnson & Johnson, J&J.
So aside from Google being really expensive, we see consumer staples, you know, really blue chip companies like J&J just being ridiculously expensive. It's a phenomenal company. I will not argue that, but it's trading at the highest valuation I've ever seen it at. And my model goes back to 2004 and beyond. So it's just too expensive. There's too much danger.
Okay, so you just heard it. Johnson & Johnson, a little too much danger there.
Danger, danger.
So you got a warning.
Warning, warning, warning.
That was a sell on J&J. And unfortunately, well, we've gotten the warning that we are out of time. So we have to let Brian Frank go. But Brian, it is great to chat with you. It's really interesting to chat with you over time and sort of see how things are changing with what you're buying and selling based on what's going on with the market and the valuations, and I hope we get a chance to do it with you again soon.
Thanks, Chuck. You gotta keep the value safe.
Brian Frank is the manager of the Frank Value Fund, the president of Frank Capital Partners. For more information, frankfunds.com, at Frank Funds on Twitter. All right, we're just about done with today's show, but we'll set you up for next week. We'll compare Brian's picks to some other people that talked about those stocks as well, and then we'll let you go for the holiday weekend as we wrap up the July 1st show right after this message.